You're here because you implement quality, you're thinking about implementing quality, or you are developing quality frameworks. How is your particular situation? Can I know, so raise your hands if you are actually implementing quality frameworks in your health units or something like that. Okay. And in terms of developing new frameworks or anything, is there any development around? Can I see any hands around? Okay. Well, thank you very much. Just to know exactly what sort of audience we got. Well, my name is Victor, and as Peggy was saying, I work for the Pan American Health Organization, and I'm based in Brazil. And this is a collaborative work that we are conducting together with Peggy. Peggy is the trigger of all these initiatives. I sort of bring the surveillance and epidemiology point of view, if you want. I also have an MCDA, multi-criteria decision analysis, you know, sort of a background as well. An MCDA, multi-criteria decision analysis, what we will be talking today here. And we also have a collaboration with Gilberto. Gilberto is a professor at the, used to be at the London School of Economics, now it's at the University of Loughborough in the UK. He is our methodological expert, if you want. And finally, Laura. Laura is the chief executive of the International Society for the Disease Surveillance, based in Harvard, sorry, in Boston. And I'm also a member of the ISDS, and until recently I was the a member of the board of directors. So today we are going to talk about how we're building the framework, how we improve the framework for evaluation, for quality evaluation, based on the public health aim that Peggy just explained. Before we do that, right, so what was the motivation? What actually got me attracted to this whole project? On the left you have the an excerpt from Peggy's paper, the 2011 paper, about the application of the public health aims on the National Vaccine Program Office. I don't expect you to read this thing, it's just, and as you can see, I'm only showing 5 public health aims out of the 9 that she developed. My point is just, well, you can see how the National Vaccine Program Office says that it's performing. This sort of approach basically indicates the presence or absence of all these activities against each criteria. Now, my motivation was, how do we expand? Also, this is one of the improvements that Peggy already mentions in her paper. How do we expand from this checklist of absence and presence of some activities against each criteria into some more granular levels or scales that allows us to measure performance and monitoring time and between units. And because of my background and because of my daily job, which is mostly based on surveillance, we thought about using these and apply it on a surveillance evaluation framework. But that also some of the motivation, more contextual, if you want. So a couple of days ago, I attended to this public health finance table that Peggy was leading here. And they were talking about the budget cuts and back in, and I'm sure this is something very prevalent. This is a natural 2011 statement about, I just want to call your attention to the bits in red, and I'm sure you're pretty quite familiar about all these things, you know, budget cutbacks happening simultaneously, and how do we actually go about the multiple competing health issues, each of them delivering an impact, and how do we combine all these things together? Well, luckily, as we said in the second paragraph already, Tuna indicated by Natural, there are a number of methodologies available, and the one we'll be presenting here today is one of them, that actually allows these objectively ranking and of decisions and alternatives. So what we're presenting is the decision support system, or decision system support, DSS. Also based on the fact that we humans are quite limited in the way we can process information. And empirically, it's been shown that we cannot actually handle 4 chunks of information simultaneously. But it's also given the range of stakeholders that involve in all these decisions and all these strategic decisions, it's also not just a technical problem, but also a social problem. We have to take into account the different perspectives, the different objectives and values they bring to the table. So it's also a social component in all these approaches. And finally, it allows us to actually create a framework that is defensible, systematic, and we can always go back until why we make the decisions that we actually took. So evaluation of system is a quite complex decision, actually. As I just said, it has two components. One, the organizational side, and then the analytical one. Analytically may sound quite daunting. Believe me, based on my experience, and I'm sure you have the same experiences, it's nothing compared with the organizational challenges. So from an analytical point of view, the technical point of view, yes, we will have to deal with uncertainty, we will have to do it with dynamic context, dynamic criteria, dynamic preferences, many variables, multiple alternatives, many decision criteria, and many people actually, you know, want to play into it. But believe me, that is absolutely nothing compared with the challenges on the organizational side. All these different values, desires, motivations, convictions, different frames, cultures, personalities, and the group dynamics, how we actually, in an established framework, we handle the group dynamics. MCDA, or the Multi-Criterion Model, and facilitating workshops actually provides a way forward. So the problem is complex. Evaluating systems is a very complex approach, a complex problem, as is evaluating surveillance. And evaluation surveillance, disease surveillance actually has been around for a while. And there's been a number of attempts and papers, and there's a lot of written about evaluating surveillance. A few papers actually conducted a review of that, and I just thought about presenting this one by Calvert et al. In 2015. They actually conducted a systematic review of all the evaluation of surveillance systems, you know, up to date. They went about 100 papers, something like that. They chose about 15 of them, you know, based on the criteria, the inclusion and exclusion criteria. And they came up with those four groups of attributes that were important to measure the performance of surveillance systems. They classified those attributes in effectiveness group, functional ones, value, and organizational. And well, I'm not going to get into the detail of these things, but for example, for the effectiveness ones, you can see very typical attributes that are important for measuring the performance of surveillance: the timeliness, the sensitivity, the specificity, the representativeness. All these things already, you know, been published by the CDC quite a long time ago, actually. Then they have the functional ones, things like flexibility, data quality, simplicity. They're a bit more intangible, aren't they? And then we've got the value ones, which, as you can see, they are not so well, or not frequently used by the papers that they review, given the length of the bars. And then they, at the very right of the graph, they actually produced three quite specific organizational attributes, which, from an MCDA perspective, they actually means to an end. And they shouldn't be here, probably. Now, they conducted this study, as I said, and I think it's good because it also provides justification for the work that we are conducting, that we are performing at the moment. So those are the conclusions for the paper. Yeah, so as I said, surveillance evaluation, or surveillance of a complex system, is a quite daunting task because we got multiple attributes and then we have to assess the performance. None of the approaches of the 15 papers that they reviewed provided information about how to interpret the attributes assessment. They called for the need for developing a practical tool in the evaluation of surveillance, the need for flexibility. None of the evaluation approaches took into account the stakeholders' perceptions. Remember, we talk about the analytical component of a problem and the organizational component of a problem. If we only tackle one, we'll fail. None of the methods provide gold standards which could guide the interpretation of the assessment, and they ended up saying that we need to provide recommendation how to balance performance versus cost. So all of the surveillance evaluations up to date, they evaluate the technical attributes of surveillance. As I said before, those are the frameworks by the CDC, published already by Jim Mueller and others in 2004. There is currently an initiative by the Europeans called RISC-SERV, but all of these evaluations are purely qualitative. nothing against qualitative research at all. I think actually with age, as I was explaining yesterday to Peggy, I really enjoy more appreciate more the qualitative research and the importance of it. But the problem with the qualitative research is that it really doesn't allow the aggregation and comparison between units and in time. And the other problem is with the technical attributes and the technical flavor perspective of all these surveillance evaluations, that it doesn't handle the intangibles. And finally, we don't know. Okay, we identify gaps, but we don't know which gaps are more important, which gaps we need to focus on and actually invest money to improve. So, because any evaluation that we run, as I said before, is a means to an end. We don't do evaluation for the sake of it. We do evaluation, so we identify gaps, and there is a management decision behind that. And that management decision probably involves use of resources. So we want to identify what gaps are the most important ones. So evaluation is a means to an end, which is the investment of a management action, perhaps. And finally, well, as I said before, all of the evaluations of surveillance up to date, they are based on the technical aspects, all those technical attributes that I showed you on that bar chart, sensitivity, specificity, etc. There have been already calls about the need to evaluate the value of surveillance. For example, this paper by Hasler et al. In 2011. But they actually value surveillance, or the value of surveillance, if you want, and they inherently link this value to the intervention and the impact of the intervention, which I think is, well, for starters, and we'll see later on, from a MCDA perspective, multi-criterion perspective, they violate one of the principles, which is controllability. The fact that we provide good evidence, you know, we can see it later on, an intervention that is faulty, and given, you know, based on this paper, they actually says that the surveillance fails because intervention wasn't well implemented, basically. So the intangibles are important. They address those organizational issues that I mentioned before, and this is a graphical way of putting the value of a system, or the value of a surveillance, or the value of a service. So we have in the numerator the tangible deliverables, that is, for example, if you buy a product, the product that you buy, or if you get a service, the service that you have, but all the intangibles, the what they call the feelings, right? Whether you got a smile, or the queue is not large, or the environment, or the temperature, or the shop is okay, all those things are very important in your decision for buying a service or a product. And in the denominator, you got the cost, the hassle, and the uncertainty. It's simple math, the two critical elements in any value equation. In order to increase the value, obviously, we need to reduce the denominator. In this case, the effort and the variance for the customer. And also, importantly, we need to increase the numerator, in this case, intangibles. And we need to have a measure, a way of actually measuring these intangibles. This quote about the Elmo Economicus doesn't exist. I don't want to get into much detail about this. But as you know, there is a lot of theory behind the expected utility theory, that people always follow a rational path, and we are rational beasts, and then, we make rational decisions. Unfortunately, that is not very descriptive of the behavior of people. And there are other theories, like the cumulative prospect theory, CPT here, that actually explains why we keep smoking and driving cars and not actually buckling our seatbelts. So, this is the methodology that we are suggesting for solving complex problems, the multi-criteria decision analysis. As we just see, quality is a multidimensional problem, as is surveillance systems. And MCDA basically allows us to address all the problems that we've seen so far. So it allows the assessment of multiple impacts, and they could be either of monetary nature, for example, the cost of something, or the sensitivity, which comes in a scale from 0 to 100, but also it allows us to bring into the same equation and add to the monetary impacts non-monetary impacts, for example, relating to the intangibles that we just saw. It has a procedure for breaking the problem into smaller pieces. It uses expert opinion, and this is critical because it addresses those organizational issues that appeared on one of the first slides. It allowed the integration of several streams of information, whether they are hard data, as I said before, the dollar, or the sensitivity, or the specificity, together with intangibles. And we'll see some of those intangibles, transparency, for example. And also it allows the aggregation of multiple opinions from multiple stakeholders, having all these different values, all these different cultures, etc. And many, in many occasions with conflicting objectives as well. MCDA was born in the management sciences. It's been used quite extensively recently in the pharmaceutical industry and any commercial enterprises. You can Google it and you have, there are already papers that are looking at the trends in the use of MCDA. But the use in the health application, in the health arena, hasn't been that extensive, actually. So this is a paper by Victoria Engie back in 2014. It's a systematic review of the use MCDA applications in health arena, in the health spectrum. And as you can see, the numbers are not that large. But obviously, we can see an increasing trend. And those are the fields in which MCDA has been used up to date. So we have a range of things, from regulation to control and prevention of diseases, surveillance, managing anticipating changes, emerging threats, program management, you name it. Mostly MCDA has been used in the health arena for prioritizing diseases. So we got a bunch of diseases, we got a criteria, and we evaluate the different diseases against those criteria, whether there is the impact or the incidence, that impact being measured by incidence, prevalence, severity, etc. And that is the most common application of MCDA models in the health arena. What we're suggesting here is a different approach. Well, again, just selling the benefits of MCDA. In quality assessment, MCDA brings that transparency that is important, especially in the trade-offs between the criteria. We will have a number of criteria and how we, or the decision makers in this case, choose one criterion versus the other. It is important to keep a track on that to defend, you know, decisions in the future. It is scalable. Yeah, as I said again, it allows identification of gaps. Nothing new here, but again, we move from checklist into granular scales that allows us to follow improvement and progression. Allows comparisons in time and in other units, provided, of course, that the weights of the criteria are similar and the contextual variables as well, and can handle perceptions. Has been already used in quality assessment. That paper by Ferreira in 2011 actually looks at the application of MCDAs on the banking industry, you know, what sort of criteria were important for the penetration of bank branches in different markets. Now, multi-criteria decision analysis has got a process, and this is briefly shown here. So we have to define the objectives of what we want to achieve, in this case, evaluation of surveillance systems. You have to deep down further into the what sort of scenarios you want to tackle. And for this particular exercise, surveillance evaluation, we decided to start with two scenarios. One is disease detection, and the other one is monitoring disease occurrence. You define criteria that is led later on, well, it's defined by the decision makers. That is this is an interactive process. What are the alternatives? In this case, the alternatives are the different surveillance streams. So the investment scenarios is quite large, or the spectrum of it. We identify the group of experts, the set of stakeholders that are important for the decision. And then we go into the methodological side of the MCDA, which is basically identifying the value functions and allocating weights to the different criteria. We run the model, we evaluate the alternatives, we prioritize them, and then we aggregate the results. We'll see some of these in the following slides. You remember that bar chart that I show you, with all the different effectiveness criteria on the functional ones and everything like that. And then you remember saying that, you know, far right, there were three criteria, like presence of laboratory and something like that. They are quite specific. And then I said, these are actually means to an end. So the criteria needs to actually show, the criteria for our MCDA, the criteria that we use to evaluate strategic decisions, needs to be based on fundamental objectives. So we cannot use means to an end, something that leads to something else, as a criteria. We have to have what is the most fundamental objectives as our set of criteria. And this is basically what I'm saying here, essentiality in relation to the ultimate objective. What do we care about? We care about outcomes. We don't care about means to reach those outcomes. And so there are a couple of examples, actually. There was this paper by this group of researchers that they used 57 criteria. That's far too many. I mean, the chances of getting something wrong in terms of breaching some of the assumptions, basic assumptions in MCDA, are very, very large. And we'll see some of those assumptions later on. In fact, Stewart, back in 1996, said that, you know, the optimum size of criteria is probably about 7. They need to be controllable. I mean, we need to have control on those criteria. They need to be operational feasible, whether we have data or proxy indicators to inform those criteria. It's all right to have proxy criteria. I mean, so for example, for civilian sensitivity, we can think of civilian sensitivity being one criterion. The scale is quite basic. It goes from 0 to 100 in terms of case detection, for example. But for other criterion, the scales will be quite difficult, for example, transparency. It needs to be comprehensive, concise, understandable, non-redundant, to avoid double counting. And I don't know why I put it at the bottom, preferentially independent. This is probably the most critical criteria, the most critical property of the selection of criteria in an MCDA approach. And what that means is that the decisions we made about one alternative, one option, one civilian stream, one disease, whatever options or alternatives you are trying to decide upon, decisions we made on that thing against one criterion cannot be influenced by the decisions we made against the other criteria. So, for example, there's this very nice example about your criteria to decide. Think about this paper, a quite interesting paper about a company that is moving offices. And then for them, they had two important criteria to move from one building to the next one, which is the floor, the number of square meters, and also the number of offices. And so the new building manager asked them about what is the most important criteria that you have, and they say, well, actually, it's the surface. So I care about the number of the size of the building, and also care about the number of offices. So, but the problem is that when they go to the building, they find out that the size of the building is not that big. So hence, the size of the offices is going to be very small. So they actually reduced the preference in terms of the size of the building because the size of the offices was going to be very small. So that is the sort of preferential independence that we need to avoid. That we need to pursue in the relations between criteria. Now, getting into the specifics of our project. So what we did basically is we used the public health aims from PEGI. And we added all the different technical criteria from all the surveillance evaluations that I already explained some of them. So you have the effectiveness criteria, like sensitivity, specificity, timeliness, accuracy, and representativeness. They have to be here because obviously they describe how effective surveillance is in detecting a case, how specific is that case, how soon we can detect the case, what is the accuracy, and by accuracy we mean whether we are running, you know, for example, strain identification or variant identification, and representativeness, whether we are leaving some populations or some part of the country underserved. But we also have functional criteria. I'll give you a more detail about how we develop these different criteria into levels of performance in the next slides. Under the functional set of criteria, we have sustainability, versatility, and whether it leads to a timely policy action or not. Now, the tricky was how do we combine all these technical attributes with the public health quality aims? And then we have a lot of discussions, Peggy, Gilberto, and Laura and I, about how do we combine these two things, because they appear to be at different levels. One could think, actually, you know, the public health quality aims seems to be more strategic, the other seems to be more operational. Perhaps the effectiveness and the functional criteria could feed into the public health quality aims. Well, our last line of thinking is probably that both the effectiveness and the functional criteria should inform the efficacy public quality aim here. So we will have to is a set of fundamental criteria, transparency, health promotion, proactive, efficacy, multiple utility, and advancing the field of being innovative, and then a bunch of sub-criteria informing efficacy. That bunch is basically the effectiveness and functional criteria. So we are creating a hierarchy of different criteria and sub-criteria. This is nothing new, we've done this before for other MCD applications, and it's quite simple to implement. And then you remember those organizational criteria, like the management of surveillance program and evaluation of a program. Well, we are not yet convinced whether these are fundamental criteria or means to an end. So we have to define whether we consider them into the overall model or we leave them outside. So this is the current status of our thinking in terms of how we combine effectiveness and functional criteria that allows, you know, to actually evaluate the performance from a technical perspective with the public health quality aims. I got efficiencies here circled in red because we're getting rid of efficiency. What we've done from the 9 public health quality aims that Peggy produced, what we're suggesting here is to only reduce this list to just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 public quality health aims. And efficiency we are not including here because later on we'll explain how we include cost into all this structure. Right. So the work we've done so far is how we basically thought about the architecture of the model. We got surveillance attributes, technical, functional, and then we got public health quality aims. How do we combine the two of them? We came up with that structure that I just presented. The next step is how do we define levels within each of those criteria? And for that, some of them will be quite straightforward. For example, for sensitivity, as I said, it's a scale. It's a natural scale from 0 to 100. How many cases we detect? How many cases does your surveillance system detect in the last year? It goes from 0 to 100. It changes a little bit depending on whether you're looking for case detection or you're looking for measuring disease prevalence or incidence or occurrence. I'm not going to go through all these things. So, for example, for sensitivity, the description is the ability of the surveillance system to detect cases of the condition of interest, and then we either have the proportion of cases detected, discretized into 6 levels from 0 to 100, or the probability of case detection when surveillance objectives is the condition, is the detection of it. And then, you know, we have 1, 2, 3, another 5 levels here. Specificity, what is whether we have false positives or not. The timeliness, that is a difficult one. We all love to know, you know, how much time we save because we have a very timely surveillance. Unfortunately, I came across with very few papers actually quantifying that thing. So, in the absence of a hard quantitative scale, we went for a proxy qualitative scale, like, you know, the one that we show here. So, timeliness, we decided four levels of performance that goes from detection is rarely timely. The detection is frequently delayed, detection is without undue delay, or detection is timely. And why is that important? Because of obviously the potential of a spread. And I recognize that obviously this is sort of targeting to the infectious disease side of things. We are trying to develop the same thing for non-communicable diseases. The accuracy, already we defined that whether we have strain characterization or not, and the representativeness, that is a difficult one as well. And what we decided was actually let's find out what are the 3 most important variables that define the representativeness of your surveillance system, whether it is age, sex, or socioeconomical status, or whether it is, you know, in a bit of the country that is completely underserved. And based on that, we come up with the levels of performance. The next stage, when we've done this, when we define the scales, we will quantify these scales. We'll ask the experts to actually quantify this and produce a value function for all these different, for all these levels of performance for each criteria. We did the same for the organizational capacities, although, as I said, we are not sure whether they are means to an end or fundamental objectives. We acknowledge that it's very important. Actually, in other applications, we included a coordination as an important thing. You know, whether the system is well coordinated, is well planned, proactively conducted, and so on. But in this case, we are not that sure, especially because we already have quite a large number of criteria. We did the same with functional capacities. Some of these, actually, they fall into all those intangibles. And for them, they are not you know, robust hard scales, we have to define qualitative proxy scales. Like for the sustainability, the lowest level is the structures are overly engineered, the processes are too convoluted and costly, acceptability is low. That is the lowest level. The highest level is structures and processes are lean, acceptability by all the stakeholders is high, sustainability is guaranteed in the long term. And we come up with all these different definitions for all these different functional capacities. And we did the same with the public health quality. So if we want to move from a checklist, from yes or no, presence or absence, we have to develop levels of performance within each of those criteria. And this is exactly what we've done here for the public health aims, as I just explained, for the other functional and effectiveness quality criteria. So for the transparent, whether the surveillance processes, the lowest level is surveillance processes, limitations and use are not explicit, and they are not shared beyond technical and policy circles. Or the best one would be surveillance processes, limitations and use are always explicit outside technical and policy circles. We did the same for the other six public health quality aims. That was quite resource intensive, and it took us quite a lot of time to develop all these qualitative statements. The next stage is basically value them. I'm sure you're familiar with all these papers that actually, you know, ask for scores. I score from 1 to 5 all these different levels. The problem with that is that we are assuming linear relationships between 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4. That is never the case, or rarely is the case, actually. For you, moving from 1 to 2 may be completely different than from moving from 2 to 3. Hence, you cannot assume a linear, you know, relationship between the different levels. But doing this value function elicitation, we can actually reflect the shape of that particular, you know, how we increase from the, how we increase between the levels of performance. How do we do that? Well, basically, as I said here, we measure the relative attractiveness between the levels of performance. Those 3, 4, at least 4 levels of performance. That's the minimum required. You need at least 4 points in this shape, on this function that I'm showing here, to come up with a robust value function. So on the vertical axis, we got the value of increasing the capacity. It goes from 0 to 100. On the horizontal axis, for example, the criterion timeliness. It goes from 0 to 100 as well. It could be any other. Actually, the scale is relevant in this case. And so think about what this value function shows is that, you know, we allocate not as long as we improve the timeliness from the 0 to 100, correct? I'm sorry, that is not the right scale, but as long as we provide or increase the timeliness, we allocate an increasing, you know, value to that, you know, better timeliness of the system. Then there is an exponential increase, if you want, and then it sort of levels off at the very end, showing that, you know, perhaps the value we allocate to the detection of seconds or days earlier one disease is not that important. This actually, I took it from vaccination. This value function applies quite well to vaccination of infectious diseases because it shows that, for example, when you reach herd immunity at some point, 70%, 80%, there is no much value in increase the vaccination to the other 15 or 20%. Hence, that plateau at the very end of the shape of the curve. There are different ways of actually eliciting this value function from experts. In this case, there would be surveillance experts from the International Society for Disease Surveillance, and I just pose here two, which is the direct rank rating and the bisection. They're quite straightforward, and I don't have time to explain that. So once we, there are multiple ways. So MCDA, I'm sure you know, is just a word for a bunch, extremely large range of methodologies. And they look at many different decision problems, whether they are sorting problems, ranking problems, etc. And so you can apply many different methodologies depending on the problem and on the data you have. So in this case, I'm just giving two examples. So you can score the options or the value functions using numerical scales, and there is one way that is called the direct rating that I just mentioned. Or you can use already off-the-shelf techniques like Macbeth. And once you score the different levels of performance and you come up with those value functions, you then have to weight the criteria. Because the weighting of the criteria allows us to actually aggregate the different values from the different the different scores from the different criteria into a linear model and produce a final score for the surveillance system. And then again, there are different ways of doing it. Other numerical approaches, the swing weighting, or non-numerical approaches like the math width. We've done that in the past. We apply MCDA to a range of problems, for example, the prioritization of emerging threats in the UK. And we used Macbeth for the elicitation of values for the different levels of performance of a set of criteria. And then we used the swing weighting for the elicitation of the weights of the criteria. But as I said, the range is vast, and there is an awful lot of alternatives for you to use. For example, in another paper, we actually use direct rating techniques for the elicitation of value functions for the levels of performance and for the weight, because we conducted an online exercise. Actually, doing the swing weighting was quite heavy on the experts, so we used the ranking order centroid technique, which is quite easy to run online. Now, so we've got a surveillance system at the top. We've got a bunch of criteria 1, 2, 3, 4, N. And below those boxes around here, you can see the weights that we elicit from the expert, either following swing weighting or Macbeth or whatever. And here, for example, we just try to represent, A, B, C being three surveillance streams, and how they actually, once we score the surveillance streams against each of those criteria, how they score against each of those criteria, and the overall ranking here, A, B, and C. So that is basically what we try to show here, that following MCDA, we are able to integrate a very different range of criteria, intangibles, quantitative, and coming up with the scores that can be integrated in a linear model. It can be done, actually, as I said before, and we've done this in the past for other applications. We use this sort of approach to measure how a particular civilian stream, for example, B in this case, progress in time. So, for example, we got B here, and that is, let's say last year, how they perform. And this current year, actually, this is how they perform against the different criteria, criteria 1 being sensitivity, criteria 2 being transparency, for example. And we can see, there is some improvement, and some of the criteria they didn't perform as well. But overall, the surveillance system actually improved. So up to here, in a very quick way, the way, how we can integrate quite different criteria and objectives to actually come up with a model that allows evaluation, right, of surveillance systems or the quality of surveillance systems. Now, you remember I got rid of the efficiency public health quality aim from PEGI, and that's because we want now to include cost in all this project. How do we do that? I mean, in an ideal world, we want to create a cost function, as we did for the value function, for every single project. And that is what we're trying to show here. So the cost function is the one in blue. And it shows, how much, the more you increase your timeliness, there is obviously a cost associated to it. So perhaps, in the blue function can show that, there is a steep increase in cost at the beginning of the setting up the surveillance system and, trying to get a timely surveillance system. Then we reach some efficiency plateau in the middle. And then again, because we're trying to reach those people, they are difficult to identify, there is a steep increase at the end of the blue curve, right? And that is the relationship between the cost function and the value function. Now imagine that we have two surveillance systems, A and B, and that we want to improve 10% the timeliness of surveillance system A or the timeliness of surveillance system B. So we have to define which of the two is the most efficient way of going forward. So if we increase 10% the timeliness of surveillance A, and we plot this increase 10% here into the value function, we observe this increase in value for surveillance stream A, which is quite large. If we do the same for surveillance system B, which is here, we increase 10% the timeliness, or our objective is to increase the timeliness by 10%, we see that the value of increasing that timeliness by 10% is actually this one, because it plots from here to here, that value. Now, the cost between the two is quite similar. we plot that against that curve, the blue one, the cost is just this one for civilian stream A, and for civilian stream B is that one. So finally, we just plot the ratios. The value cost ratio for A and the value cost ratio for B, and as we can see, the denominator is quite similar, the cost is quite similar, but the numerator is quite different. So the value of A is much higher than the value of B. So we probably define, you know, and we probably choose improving the timeliness of civilian stream A over the timeliness of civilian stream B. And we do the same for multi-criteria. This is what we're doing now. So once we move from one criteria, as we just saw now, timeliness, we can do the same for the rest of the criteria. So here you go to civilian stream A, and you're going to see whether we can improve the capacity number 4 from 37 here to 100. We run the model, we evaluate, you know, the overall score for that civilian stream A, taking into account all the value functions that we just described, and actually that capacity building increased the civilian's value, or the overall civilian's value, from 37 to 49. And that is at a cost of $9 million, this is a random figure. We run the value for money ratio, and we see that is 1.33. Okay, we divided basically 12 over 9, and we got .33. The options are multiple. Another capacity building option, CB2, could be actually increasing the capacity, or increasing two capacities, capacity 5 and capacity 6. The overall value of CB2, once we run the model, is actually 52, so it's three points higher than the value of increasing capacity 8, but the cost is 1 million more, if you want. So based on cost, we would go at any point in time with capacity building 1 because it's cheaper, but when we do the value for money function, or the value for money ratio here, we can see that capacity building 2 is actually 1.5 versus the value for money ratio of capacity building 1 is being 1.3. So in any case, we probably go for capacity building 2 and improve, you know, capacities 5 and 6 versus only capacity 4, because the value for money is higher or greater than the latter. Okay? We apply this across the board and for many different projects. So imagine you have a budget of £65,000 and you're going to see, where shall I improve or invest this money? This is a different scenario investment. How many projects are we able to invest or, you know, improve with this money? Well, we just basically do what we just saw. I mean, we produce the ratio, or the value for money ratio, for each of the projects. So you have project 1, project 2, project 3. We have the cost for each of these projects, and we have the overall value against all that set of criteria that we just described. And the last column basically explains what is the value for money ratio. So for project 1, we got a 1.50, for project 2, 1.25. We just rank them here, and we use the money, we got £65,000 or $65,000. We just run them based on the value for money functions. And we would basically fund or implement project 3 because it's got the highest ratio, project 7 at 4, project 10. And we, on the last column, basically count or add up, you know, the cost, cumulative cost of the different projects up to we reach 62 or 65,000. That is the budget ceiling we got. So we stop the investment in project 8, and we allocate the money into these 8 projects because they are most efficient ones. So that is sort of the way we're heading at the moment. There is nothing new about this, actually. So the MCDA, as I said, is quite well developed. It hasn't been used for civilians evaluation, but it has been used for other, you know, combination of MCDA and portfolio. What we have here ultimately is a portfolio problem, because we got a range of alternatives, and then we want to find that most efficient profile, or most efficient border, frontier, for the investment of our scarce resources. So I just got 5 minutes, and these are the final slides. There are 2 papers that are quite interesting, and if you are into this sort of world, I invite you to read them. One is Guo et al. In 2014, and they also applied a similar scenario that we are describing. So it's quite a sophisticated paper, actually. And they are basing the paper on 2 very well-studied diseases, actually, even influenza being one. And they use quantitative scales, you know, for the impact of avian influenza on against all those criteria. So they know that, you know, if you increase the timeliness of detection of avian influenza, you can save X many lives. Unfortunately, for most of diseases, 99% of diseases, that is not the case. We don't have that luxury of data. So basically what they do is, you know, they run a biological model, they do a disease transmission model here at the top. They combine it with, you know, civilian sets. They actually define a number of civilian scenarios. And quite interestingly, they run the portfolio at this stage, and they're trying to find what is the most efficient civilian set against the different scenarios of transmission that they model here. And then they apply the multi-criteria decision analysis at the end. Quite interesting approach, because they reduce the number of scenarios or options or projects that they put through the multi-criteria decision analysis, because they only use the ones that are most efficient, the ones here at the top, and they get rid of those. The problem with that is that, whether intentionally or not, they're giving a lot of importance to cost versus the other criteria that they use at the very at the second stage. That, you know, could be social criteria, public perception, that could be even more important than the efficiency. And there is also a very nice paper, again I recommend this one, Convertin and Valverde, which is basically the same application, a combination of biological models with MCDA and portfolio analysis to come up with a portfolio decision analysis framework for value-focused ecosystem management. And I'm not going to get into more details, but it's similar to what the sort of scenario I just described. Our project, well, this is where we are at the moment. We envision two possible applications of our model. One is retrospectively, i.e. evaluating civilian systems, you know, from the last year. So let's say mid-2016, we evaluate the civilian system in 2015, how the civilian system performed against all those different criteria. We need obviously cost data for that civilian system. And we can actually ask the policymakers to start top down, so looking at, you know, the public health quality aims and going down into the sub criteria that inform efficacy, as I showed before. That is the quite easy one to do. The most difficult one is actually the prospective one, because we come into these portfolio problems that I was just describing. Think about, you know, the alternatives or the multiple projects that we can think, or combinations are almost endless, and we have to come up with our frontier of efficiency. So we can think of many different alternatives of investing money for the next year, whether it is building up a new lab or training new people, or we can do it based on I want to increase my sensitivity by 10%, and it's actually coming up with a comprehensive list, or at least a representative list of all those investment scenarios, which is the challenge right now. As you can imagine, obviously, if we want to evaluate all these different criteria, we have to have process-related indicators. So I cannot ask the policymaker to evaluate 2015 civilian system, the sensitivity of it, and he can just, you know, out of the hat come up with a number saying my sensitivity was 50%. Obviously, there must be another process beyond what we just described to capture that data from the field. And so they have to have systems in place to evaluate quantitatively for those criteria that can do so, the value or the performance of those criteria. For example, for sensitivity, what was the sensitivity of that surveillance system? And I'm suggesting some models here, for example, capture. And the same for accuracy and the other more intangible criteria. The exercise is not free from challenging, and on the analytical side, on the technical side, as you remember, there were two, organizational and analytical ones. So this expected utility theory works quite well for, you know, as I said, if we are homo economicus, and we treat gains and losses in the same way. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We are all risk averse, especially in the public health arena. And maybe we need to change the value functions if we're talking about losses, or in this case, budget cuts. So we're thinking about what can we do if we have another $65,000 for the next year. But the question also could be, what can we do to reduce, you know, if we've got a budget cut of $65,000, what are the sort of criteria or investments, de-investments in this case, that will affect the least my civilian system? There are a lot of uncertainties, starting from structural, whether our model actually represents a reality, and all the different data parameters that you can think of. Heterogeneity, what is the unit of our evaluation? Is a public, is a local authority, is a civilian system, is a civilian stream? This is something that we have to define, and depending on whether we identify that unit or not, there'd be issues about the aggregation of these different levels. And then many biases around, either relating to structural issues, but also in the definition of attributes. Next step, as I said before, I think this is probably my last slide. We're going through the ISDS board of directors. We are using them as our civilians SMEs, and we'll validate the architecture that we present today, all the attributes. We'll elicit the value functions and the weights for the criteria from them. And then we move on with actually testing the system. Luckily, I have, in my role within PAHO, I have a captive population that I can expose to the systems without much hassle. So we'll actually try to implement this system in a regional evaluation of high-latitude surveillance in Latin America. I'm not getting into that detail. Basically, with all the analytical problems, there are also a lot of organizational issues. Calvert also suggesting a number of tips that you can use, obviously, to convince the policymakers about the importance of running these things. She says that a lot of the tools out there for the evaluation of civilians, so some of them they actually had up to 49 attributes. That is completely that is extremely difficult to handle, and we're going to fall into many problems with regard to double counting, preferential dependence, etc. And they provide a list of things that as a tool you want to show to the policymaker to make it more attractive. And this is really, really my last slide. And we did so back in 2013 when we actually ran the emerging threats in the UK. We come up with a quite visual interface for the policymaker. And this was a success story. Analytically, it's quite simple. The policymakers actually developed the whole tool. They contributed from the very beginning. They produced input into it. And this was developed in 2008. It's still running, very much in use, and that, if you ask me, is a measure of success. And with that, I think I'm finished.